This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn and Shaoning. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking with YB Fahmi Fadil, MB4 Lembah Pantai, and Amir Farid, Director of Strategy at the KRA Group, on the outcome of the PKR National Congress. But in the meantime, since it is International Anti-Corruption Day this morning, let's talk about corruption now, specifically corporate corruption. So we're also running a poll on this this morning on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, do you think Pakatan Harapan has been doing a good job in dealing with corruption since they took over? Now, let us know what you think. We'll be taking a look at the results shortly. But first, you know, since this is International Anti-Corruption Day, this will also be a focus of the breakfast grill later on at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, because today, very interestingly, I'll have MP of Sete Wangsa, Nick Nazmi, together with Transparency International Malaysia head, Dr. Mohan, to discuss about whether in the first place we have the institutions to stop corruption and whether more can be done, because it's going to be a forward-looking breakfast grill. Mm-hmm. Not so much about talking about the past, which I think we all are very familiar with.
Yes. So now the Pakatan Harapan government came into power over a year ago, pledging to seriously tackle corruption. So the question is, how well have they done? Now, for a view of the anti-corruption efforts from the corporate perspective, this morning we turn to Devanesan Evanson, CEO of the Minority Shareholders Watch Group. Thank you for joining us this morning, Devanesan. So from your engagement with stakeholders, is the perception of corporate corruption in Malaysia improving or worsening?
It's definitely improving. The recent change in the government has brought about an increased impetus to curb corruption, and also the robustness and vigor with which the MACC is carrying out its work is definitely another factor that has contributed to the decrease in corrupt practices.
And how robust is Malaysian legislation when it comes to corporate corruption then?
It's very robust. I think our problem has always been one of implementation. We have the best of laws, we have the best of rules, and really the implementation and perhaps even the political will to implement our laws and rules impartially without fear or favour. That's always been our perceived weakness, the implementation stage. And of course, one cannot talk about legislation in isolation. Good legislation must be complemented with just an impartial judiciary. And we've seen much changes in the judiciary, which is, you know, for the better. The best of laws will, of course, come to nothing if we do not have an impartial judiciary. So they both, the legislature and the judiciary, play a very important part in curbing corrupt practices.
So how would you assess the enforcement and political will to tackle corruption under the present Pakatan Harapan government? Would you say it has improved over this past 18 months?
Yes, definitely. I think the enforcement and the political will has improved. One just has to read the newspapers just about every other day, you know, and we find that many people are being charged for corrupt practices. And some are from the judiciary, and some are from the legislature, and some are from the executive. So based on these publications, what we read in the newspapers itself, it shows there's a heightened degree of enforcement by the MACC. They are more assertive and, I dare even say, more aggressive in enforcing the provisions under the MACC to curb corruption.
Now, apart from the enforcement mechanisms, what about corporate bodies? Do you see companies actually taking serious efforts to prevent corruption then?
Companies are definitely taking very serious efforts to prevent corruption, or at least to put it more in context, to curb corruption tremendously. And there are two main reasons for this. As mentioned earlier, the robust tackling of corruption by the MACC, the assertiveness with which they carry out their work has certainly been a factor that has curbed corruption. And of course, the forthcoming implementation of the Section 17 capital A of the MACC, which actually ascribes corporate liability and then has a deeming provision whereby, the directors are also held liable if the corporation is held liable. That's going to kick in June 2020. And that's another factor that has caused many organizations, corporates, to actually look at corruption, curbing corruption very seriously. And there has definitely been much activity amongst corporates on implementing the adequate procedures. The adequate procedures are the ministerial guidelines that has been issued, which actually states that if you have these adequate procedures, you can use them as a defense against the corporate liability. So what we see is that many corporates are now, you know, hurrying to ensure that they have adequate procedures in place, because this will be a defense against corporate liability under the Section 17 capital A.
So what should companies be doing then to avoid being penalized under Section 17A? How do you determine adequate procedures for this purpose?
If you look at the adequate procedures, the ministerial guidelines, it's principle-based. When we use the word principle-based as opposed to rule-based, what we mean is that there's no one-size-fits-all. The boards have to exercise discretion in implementing the adequate procedures depending on the nature of their business, the size of the organization. So that's why we call it principle-based. But definitely it is going to be a defense against corporate liability. So I really, you know, urge and advise corporates to work on these adequate procedures and to implement them. Because, you see, the thing is that it's not only an employee who gives bribe. Anybody who's purporting to act on behalf of the corporation, it could be a third party, not even your employee. If they are caught, you know, you have this corporate liability provision kicking in, and also the deeming provision whereby the directors and senior management can be held liable for the corrupt practices.
Well, thank you very much, Devanesan, for your insight. That was Devanesan Evanson, CEO of the Minority Shareholders Watch Group. And I think it's quite important, the aspect that he highlighted, that this needs to be principle-based rather than rules-based, so that to allow corporations that flexibility in order to adapt these rules or these principles of anti-corruption to their own individual organizations.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, you know, people are very clever. You can put it everything in black and white, and you can come up with a set of rules, but then they'll find the loopholes, right, to get round. So the important thing is to always have a vigilant kind of system in a corporate to prevent corruption from happening in the first place. Because I think even the World Bank points out that corruption is not, as you know, we think it's just as simple as getting a bribe. It could be as a case where you favor one party over another when you actually give out a contract, things like that. And the cost of corruption is actually very high. And ironically, it's the poorest that pay the most when it comes to corruption. And also, if you have a system in place whereby corporates are cleaner, usually there will come, and there is evidence to show, that there is more foreign direct investment into the country, because it's seen as, you know, a better place to do business. It's easier to do business.
Yeah.
Because if there's many shades of grey, right, you just kind of like, if you're a company, you're like, do you even want to go there?
Yeah, well, you know, is it going to be too troublesome? And ultimately, it all feeds into confidence and confidence in our business capabilities. So Malaysia is also ranked 61st out of 180 countries in Transparency International's 2018 Corruption Perceptions Index with a score of 41 out of 100. Not really that great. So perhaps we have a long ways to go yet.
We used to be 23 in the 1990s. So we have actually fallen quite a bit, and also 41, we've kind of just we've ranked 61 and we kind of just stagnated there for the last few years.
Let's put it this way, if you got 41 out of 100, right, that's not even a passing mark in
that's a fail.
That's a fail. That's hopefully something that we will see the government start to address even more as time moves on. But do let us know what you think on the poll that we have running. That's on the Twitter account at BFM Radio. But also this morning, let's take a look at the subject of the East Coast Rail Link, because that was the front page of The Edge this morning. Now, in construction activities for the 640-kilometre ECRL, which passes through five states, that is set to be ramped up soon, particularly in Pahang. Now, jobs for the subcontracts are expected to be awarded in the first quarter of next year. And according to China Communications Constructions Authority and Community Liaison Manager for the ECRL Section 6, the construction works will pick up at Section 6, which covers the most parts in Pahang. It's about 140 kilometres long, with four stations, 21 tunnels and 37 bridges.
Now, but if you rewind, right, I think there's always this question, right? Why is there a need for the ECRL? And yes, we have managed to slash the budget from the original 60 billion down to 44 billion. But there are still questions remain as to whether they will have a multiplier effect and will they bring the required prosperity mm-hmm. to the states of the East Coast, that being Kelantan and Terengganu? Will it resolve the fact that Kelantan is the poorest state in Peninsular Malaysia? And I had this conversation at the Breakfast Grill with Dr. Jomo, and he's not a big fan of the ECRL, and this is what he had to say.
The ECRL was a scam to basically cover up the losses of the 1MDB and also to finance the last general election. I think that is pretty clear from what we know. What needs to be done right now is to basically scrap the whole thing once and for all and basically do much, much more for the East Coast, because I don't think that would have helped. The problems of the East Coast are not really that they are deprived of transportation.
Hard words there from economist Professor Dr. Jomo Kwamesundaram on the Breakfast Grill. And if you want to listen to the full conversation, remember you can look up the podcast on the BFM app, available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. But right now we are heading into the 7:30 news. And after that, we'll be taking a look at what's going on in Singapore as well as Hong Kong. So be sure to stay tuned after the news at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.